VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. On an evening of high drama, as both Germany and Spain dig themselves out of a hole, while Poland and Sweden and France and Portugal play out absolute crackers. The group stage is done. Now it's down to the business end of Euro 2020 on the game. And remember, if you're enjoying our podcast, of course, make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast from. And also make sure you've gotten that subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times for our great Euro 2020 content across all of your devices. Remember, if you sign up today, you can get it for less than a pound a day. Just go online, search thetimes.co.uk/the game to begin your free trial. I'm Hugh Wisencroft. Thanks for joining us once again. And just what an evening it has been. I'm joined by James Gearbrandt, Jonathan Northcroft, and Gregor Robertson. How are you all?
Very well, Hugh.
There were some fantastic games a little bit earlier on. It finished Portugal 2, France 2, Germany 2, Hungary 2 as well. We'll start with a game involving France and Portugal because I think it was probably my favourite game of the competition, because aside from the matches that have all that quality, this one had the drama of the decisions as well, the referee right in the heart of it, and all of us just getting a little bit angry and wanting to see a beautiful game continue. So let's start there. Group F finishing with France on top, Germany second, Portugal third, and then Hungary at the bottom. But there were times it was like musical chairs. The teams were swapping positions in the group like wildfire. Gregor Robertson, I'll start with you on this game between France and Portugal. What did you love the most?
What I love the most? I just love the fact that you knew there were so many heavyweights, like bona fide superstars on the pitch, that at any moment there could be a flash of brilliance and the game would be turned on its head. And I think, you know, there were moments like, as you've said, some very controversial penalty decisions, which we'll come to. But Pogba's pass through to Benzema was sublime. Some of his touches, his little drag back and shot that Patricio pulled off a great save from. Mbappe threatening behind with his pace. It wasn't his best game, but he was always a threat, always a danger. Benzema obviously getting his two goals. Ronaldo getting two goals. It was just, you know, this is what these competitions are all about, really. Having two teams, two of the strongest fancied teams in the competition going head to head. And as I say, I think there have probably been better games in terms of quality. Both teams have some flaws, or I don't know. They certainly don't seem to have hit top form yet. But just the fact that there were so many outstanding players on the pitch still made it a compelling night.
I think tonight gave us the feeling that it was already the knockout stages, because the teams felt like they were going for it, like this was it, 90 minutes to either survive or pack your bags. Three penalties awarded, Jonathan. Two of them converted by Cristiano Ronaldo, a brace as well for his former Real Madrid teammate, Karim Benzema. Let's start with those penalty decisions. The first one, Hugo Lloris on Danilo Pereira. It was a punch. It was an elbow. Rio Ferdinand called it GBH. How did you see it?
it was pretty appalling, actually. And I would certainly be in the camp that thinks that goalkeepers get away with an awful lot that no other player on the pitch could get away with. And he caught a bit of the ball, but it was just a classic goalie recklessly trying to clear everything out without any sort of thought to the opposition. It was quite right that it was a penalty. It was probably the best of the penalty decisions. I mean, I almost wrote a piece at the weekend about how good VAR had been, and I pulled back from that, and I'm really glad I did, because I think actually in the last few days we've seen controversies similar to the Premier League. I do think refereeing in general has been really good in the tournament. I think there's a really good generation of European referees. You see that in the Champions League, but I'm not sure if Mr. Lahoz is one of that good generation, shall we say. And yeah, I'll take that first penalty, not sure about the other ones.
Let me take you into the world of my WhatsApp conversations during this match. I sent a message to my friends after that first penalty was awarded, saying, I'm not saying it's not a pen, but they can't keep not checking these big decisions. Eventually, we'll all be saying that one of them has ruined a game and asking, why didn't the ref have another look? And moments later, we saw Nelson Semedo nudge Kylian Mbappe, and suddenly there was another penalty. And once again, I think like the first one, the referee didn't go over to the screen and check it. The VAR officials not deeming it necessary. And I do feel like eventually this will come back to bite us at some point during this competition. James Gearbrand, what did you make of that second penalty? Semedo on Mbappe, but also what do you make about VAR at Euro 2020?
My general feeling is that VAR has been used well in the tournament. And I have never kind of agreed with, there's a certain kind of, strand of opinion, which is that it's black and white. You either have VAR and you have this kind of minute level of intrusion that you have in the Premier League, or you have nothing. You have what we had before. You have no VAR. And I have never believed that it's black and white. I've always felt that the kind of the way that VAR is used in the Premier League, the very kind of minute, pernickety, way that it is applied is not the only way that it can be used. And I do think it's been used an awful lot better in this tournament. I guess I would tend towards the opinion that, there can be ultimately a better version of VAR. I think the application of it, in the Premier League last season, I don't think that maybe we learned enough from the way that it had been used in previous international tournaments. I think Jonathan's point is right as well, that when people say that the standard of officiating has been really good in this tournament, and a lot of the focus has been on, the sort of the way in which VAR is utilized, and I do think that's a part of it, but I also think it is just that you have the creme de la creme of the European referees in this tournament. Okay, maybe there are a few who, we don't necessarily rate, but, in general, you have the absolute best of the best operating in this tournament. I actually think there are some very, very, very good referees in the working in the Euros. I'm probably going to forget some, but I think, the likes of Felix Brick and Bjorn Kaupers are really excellent. There have been others that whose names I can't quite recall in this at this moment, but I think that has also been part of it, and probably also shines a light on the fact that part of the problem in the Premier League is the standard is not quite as high across the board, which I guess you would expect.
What do you make, Gregor, of the third penalty then, the handball from Jules Koundé?
It's another one of those ones where your gut instinct tells you it shouldn't be a penalty. He obviously put his hands up to claim for a foul, I think, or for maybe handball. I can't remember what it was, but he's claiming for something. And then his hands are kind of coming back down, and then he's turning around. Yes, it's above the head. That's more kind of leaning towards the way the law and the way it has to be interpreted. But again, like some of the decisions we've talked over recent days, your gut instinct is that shouldn't be a penalty kick. And my gut instinct with Lloris was that's a penalty kick, particularly because I've been railing against this a little bit over the last couple of years, is that if you're a defender and you make any sort of tackle with force, it doesn't matter if you win the ball or not now. So goalkeepers have been like wildly overprotected and under penalised for a long, long time, and because the ball was headed onto his hand a fraction of a second later, he still like smashed into him with his elbow, and it was very dangerous. So it had to be a penalty.
Listen, I just think with this VAR, then they're never going to overturn anything. This competition, I don't know if we'll get anything really overturned by the VAR official. And for me, that means what's the point in having them? I mean, I'm not going to dwell on it because it was a fantastic game. But yeah, I've still got my gripes and I'm sure they'll continue on the game podcast for the coming weeks. So stay tuned. But I did want to talk about the two main performers of the evening, Cristiano and Karim. Cuddles at halftime as well. Don't show Roy Keane the pictures. But they were fantastic. And it was two big names, big figures in the world of football at the fore as well, Jonathan. And I thought that was great to see.
Yeah, it was. I mean, surely those two guys are allowed a cuddle at halftime without compromising their winning, credentials, which, you know, I think they've proved over the years in their careers. It's been a bit of a year of established strikers, certainly, doing the business. You think of Lewandowski and also Lukaku shining like he has. And Benzema has been, he's been fantastic since the tournament started. I think he's given a new dimension to France, and he was unlucky not to have scored before tonight. He had a very marginal offside in, I can't remember if it was the Hungary or the Germany game. It's curious to me that Mbappe and Griezmann aren't as productive with him on the pitch. That's a little question mark in my mind, whether, you know, well as Benzema's playing, is the chemistry for those two players in particular working the way it was with Giroud? I don't know. That's it. Could be that maybe France are missing Matuidi more than anything else, and that's what sort of slightly affected those two. But yeah, I mean, Benzema's that sort of run just timed to absolute perfection, staying right on the line, just onside through VAR, with the assuredness of the finish was incredible. That the penalty was really assured, given he'd missed his previous three, I think, for France. And Cristiano, I mean, you know, to go level with Ali Dia, it's one of those records that you just thought would never ever be broken, never be equaled, nobody would ever get near it. And to see somebody sort of to do it, in top level of European competition as well, not against Liechtenstein in a friendly or anything like that, it's quite something. And I know, you know, probably 63 of those 109 goals have been penalties or something like that, but you've still got to score them, as they say. And I mean, just the ice cold efficiency of Ronaldo in those moments, he had to convert those penalties, both of them. And there's never really any doubt. I mean, has any player ever had a stronger mentality? I'm not sure.
I'm going to go for the pronunciation is more Ali Day, just in case anyone thinks the former Southampton forward has 109 international goals.
Yeah, it wasn't Ali Day, was it?
There was another funny moment in the game as well, because Pepe was screaming at Rui Patricio, just telling his goalkeeper, I've seen him take hundreds of penalties when we were teammates in training, in games at Real Madrid. He is going to your right-hand side. And I mean, he was just pointing it about 15 times before the penalty was taken. And Gregor, he was incandescent after it went in the back of the net as well. Would you be fuming?
Yeah, absolutely. That was the funniest bit of it, though, his reaction afterwards. It's just kind of, I told you, man, I told you. Yeah, no, you would be. I mean, he told him enough times, or I don't know, maybe it was loud in there, but yeah, he's got his inside information and he didn't listen, so...
I loved it because Rui Patricio went to say something back and he had no words and he almost wanted to argue and then realised, yeah, there's actually nothing I can say. And he didn't even say sorry. He just looked shell-shocked. But there you go. You get an earful from Pepe. You are going to look shell-shocked. Gregor, back-to-back draws now for France. Are they fallible? Are they as good as we thought they all were going into this?
They're as good a team on paper. They're just, I think, like most teams in the competition, I'd say only Italy are kind of playing to their full potential. And the Netherlands have probably exceeded what everyone expected from them. But beyond that, everyone else has certainly got flaws, or they've certainly not hit full stride yet. And, you know, clearly you would include England in that. But the way that Deschamps sets the team up is not, they're effective. That's kind of what they've been prided on so far. Now that's why they won World Cup. They were just effective. They had Mbappe going forward, and they were very solid. And I think they're kind of doing that, but only just now. It's like they're playing on the edge. They're not really looking as quite the attacking threat that they have in previous tournaments. They're still looking pretty solid at the back. I just think, you know, there's some tough decisions got them tonight, but they're not really quite clicking up front. And I think, as Johnny said, you know, part of that could be the inclusion of Benzema, and as Alisson has reminded us many times, the exclusion of Olivier Giroud. It could well be, though, because it's not the same dynamic. And Mbappe has been particularly subdued, so they still have to be favourites, though, just because of the star quality they have in their team.
Sorry, they're such a strange team, aren't they? Because when they kind of go up to those high gears, which they're capable of, I mean, they can be irresistible. I mean, I think before the tournament, you know, I think they put four goals past Sweden. Obviously, they scored four in the World Cup final. They put seven past Ukraine, and there were times in that first half of the tournament against Germany where you sort of felt like they were just toying with Germany. But then at times it's just like that light goes out and they seem, you know, at times they seem very pedestrian, very ponderous. You know, it's sort of, you feel that the team sort of really isn't kind of arranged in a way that makes the most of the talent at its disposal. So yeah, they're a strange team, but they are really, you know, they're a formidable tournament team. And as Gregor says, I mean, they have to still be, I think, probably the favourites.
Well, I think the knockout stage might actually be easier than the group stage was for them. They face Switzerland next, and then it's Spain or Croatia. Maybe it does get easier for the French. Certainly doesn't get any easier for Portugal, though. They face Belgium next. They were fantastic at times during this match, though. I think they're an emerging force. I wonder, will Belgium be too much, Johnny, do you think, for Portugal?
I think they might be. For me, Belgium have been... you know, we take them for granted a little bit just because we know them so well, and we kind of expect them to win because they are the number ones. They win all the time, and I just thought Lukaku has been, you know, a step up again from what he did this season. De Bruyne is growing into it. They're a really quality team, and I think Portugal's interesting because, you know, it still boils down to being a bit of a Ronaldo show. Even though they've got Jota and they've got Bruno, you know, Bruno only came on in the last sort of 15 minutes and had clearly had a point to prove and almost gave away a penalty trying to prove that point, trying to tackle back. But, you know, he didn't even get in the team tonight, and Jota hasn't quite been what we know he can be. Bernardo hasn't been at his best, and everything is a bit still based around Ronaldo. So I wonder if they really do have enough. What was lovely about Portugal tonight was Renato Sanches's performance. I think that's a great story. The resilience he's shown in that, you know, coming back from the depths of you know, being a laughing stock, I suppose, after that.
The Liberty
spell.
Stadium, you can say it, Jonathan.
The Liberty years, yeah. yeah, you know, it just shows what a strange game football can be for a young talent sometimes. If he hadn't already played in England or if he hadn't already had that big move, you'd have been looking at him tonight and going, wow, you know, look at that skillful, powerful midfielder that you could put into English football. But Portugal are the unknowns, aren't they? They were like this at the last Euros, didn't win in the group stage, went on and won it. We're never quite sure what to expect. They've slightly disappointed me, though, I have to say, because I thought before the tournament on paper they really could spark, and they just don't look like all that new talent has brought them quite enough progression. So I would go with Belgium in that second round.
Sorry, Renato Sanches, 23. that shocked me. I mean, that he's still 23 after, you know, obviously bursting on the scene, as Michael Richards says, in the last Euros. You know, it's like, it does seem a shock to me. I'd also add, just, you know, yes, it is, they're so reliant on Ronaldo, but Ronaldo wasn't, I know it sounds daft, he wasn't great tonight. He scored those two penalties and he took the headlines, but, you know, there was a time when he switched a switch of play and he miscontrolled it, went under his foot and out of play. He wasn't that effective. He wasn't really causing France any trouble, but he gets the headlines, he scores the two goals, he's a leading scorer, he just somehow scores goals and gets Portugal through to the next round. And that, you know, that's a huge force.
And that's what you call being a talisman. I wanted to talk about what was going on in Munich, though. Germany tonight coming from behind twice to draw against Hungary. At times they were second Fourth, they ended up, the Hungarians in the group, and Germany were going out at times. It was another thrilling match as well. And I think the Hungarians showed incredible heart. James, tell us what you thought about this game, because it ebbed and flowed.
Yeah, it was a fascinating game, because I think, I mean, the context, obviously, of Germany having, you know, really swept aside Portugal in a dominant attacking performance where they created a lot. And I think we all probably thought after that match, you know, they'd brushed off the cobwebs and they'd sort of found the system that worked for them, and we were going to see Germany as a real force in this tournament. But tonight it was really back to, you know, they were poor for most of the match, and it was really back to the bad old days, really, that have kind of plagued them for the last 3 years, where they just have seemed, you know, just like they've seemed to lack ideas and incision on the pitch, and they just have, they've seemed a dysfunctional team, to be honest. I mean, it may not be the greatest German generation ever, but this is still a team with a huge amount of talent. And yeah, they did not live up to that tonight. I think what was really significant about this game was the system that Hungary played against them. I mean, I said on my previous appearance on the podcast, I was shocked by how unprepared Portugal were to face the wing-backs in Germany's system. Hungary were not at all. Evidently, they prepared for that very threat. And they really shut down Joshua Kimmich and Robin Hussens by matching up Germany's shape, playing a 3-4-3 of their own. And I think it will be very interesting, given the difference in how well and effectively Germany played against Portugal's 4-2-3-1 compared to Hungary's 3-4-3. It will be fascinating to see what Gareth Southgate makes of that and what consequences that might have for how he sets England up, with the caveat, of course, that Germany did actually change their shape because it wasn't working in the first half. They went back to a 4-3-3. Leon Goretzka, I mean, they got one goal from a mistake by Gulácsi, the Hungarian goalkeeper, coming out and missing a punch. And another from Leon Goretzka right at the end, which really rescued them. But apart from that, they did not create a whole lot, even, you know, in a dominant performance in terms of possession and territory.
I think England should be worried. How good are Germany?
I honestly don't think England should be worried, but I obviously don't mean that in a complacent way. Obviously, you know, I don't think England have looked particularly, you know, like they've hit their best stride themselves. But I think if you strip out all the kind of, you know, the Germaniness of Germany, all that kind of, you know, their history and their reputation, and obviously all the, you know, that kind of that heart, that place that Germany has in the kind of English psyche, you know, this is a vulnerable team. You know, as I say, it's a team that has a lot of talented players. When they click, you know, they can be really, really good, as you would expect a team that has, you know, Joshua Kimmich and Toni Kroos and Kai Havertz and Thomas Müller. You know, you wouldn't expect, you know, that they're not a terrible team. Of course they're not. But this is a team that has been quite dysfunctional, and, you know, not, you know, for the last 3 years, really, they've really struggled to string consistent performances together. So yeah, they have threats. They're a good team. They probably do have, you know, they do have a lot of that kind of tournament experience, which will probably help them. They have, you know, good experienced players. But I don't think England should, you know, I don't think England should go into this with an inferiority complex at all.
Speaking of an inferiority complex, we've got two Scots on the podcast with us tonight.
That's horrible, so
they can. What? I'm just saying, they can tell us exactly what it's like to be an underdog against a big nation. It's already happened. So, gents, you know, how should England be feeling about facing Germany? Go on, Gregor.
I think, you know, after watching the football tonight, whoever England got, they shouldn't have feared. But having said all of that, I think they would probably be pleased that it's Germany. You know, there are obviously the history with Germany, but I think if you look at the teams and the kind of just the I don't know, the kind of might of them. I think there is a bit more fragility about Germany than the other two. I think at Wembley, good atmosphere. I think England will be favourites. I don't think, Germany, as James said, we've seen two Germanys. We've seen a pretty thrilling performance against Portugal, and we've seen two performances that have been pretty fragile and slightly disoriented at times. So clearly we hope that Germany turns up, but even if the good Germany turn up, I think England can easily match them. And as I say, I think England are favourites.
Johnny, which manager has most doubts going into that knockout game?
Oh, it should be Love. I mean, as James sort of mentioned, if you take away the Germaniness of Germany, then that's a fairly dysfunctional team. They found a bit of something at this tournament. They've certainly found a bit of common purpose and intensity. They were fantastic against Portugal, but how much was that to do with Portugal just not having any idea how to play against the system? It'll be interesting to see if Southgate switches system. I thought he might have tried it at some point during the group stage just to see how the three worked. It doesn't look like he's going to now, but it would be an option for him to sort of match up. But really, I think Greg is right that Germany aren't as dangerous to England as Portugal would have been or France would have been. It's just the name. It's the fact that it's Germany and it's at Wembley and it's a home Euros, just like in 96. I mean, England has got to try and throw away all that baggage and that nonsense. And you made that terribly glib remark about us Scots, but it's probably true to say that England might have the same kind of complex that we have playing against England. And just in the same way that Scotland have to chuck it away, England have got to chuck it away. Forget that it's Germany. Just look at the team England are up against and win that game. My goodness me. I mean, the draw doesn't half open up as well. That's
Whoa. Do not look too far ahead, Johnny. That way is for fools, frankly speaking. And you two have already been there.
Let's have a look then.
They can't think about that because it's too tantalising. But if they get through, my word, it doesn't half get tasty for England.
It will be fascinating to see how England play and obviously who Southgate plays. I mean, because Germany have this very high defensive line, not entirely dissimilar to the Bayern Munich team under Hansi Flick, but probably a lot less effective at times. I mean, it's obviously difficult because at times, obviously, playing the high defensive line obviously allows them to really compress the possession into the opposition half, and at times on the front foot, it looks very, very good. But I still have not. There were times in that opening game against France where really, I mean, it was literally just a single pass and Germany, were opened up. And even in this match, Hungary's first goal came from, a quick transition. I have to say, I'm not convinced that this system has shown itself able to kind of compensate for Mats Hummels' lack of pace in that system. I know you have got Antonio Rudiger alongside him, who does have those attributes. But I mean, I think this is a team that can really be got at in transition. It's not going to happen. But for me, this game is crying out for Jadon Sancho. But it's not going to happen. And maybe Southgate has his reasons for that. But I think he's the attacker that Germany would most fear, personally.
Oh, there were options. There were options.
Just say that, Johnny will agree with... I don't think I could have seen Gazza's goal in Euro 96 another time in the build-up to the Scotland-England game. But it's only been, at the time of recording, an hour or two since the football's finished, and I've already seen about 10 images of Gareth Southgate, hands on hips, after missing that penalty kick. So you've got a full week of that, just to get the build inferiority complex, as if you if there wasn't one already. There will be by the time a week comes along.
You will see Paul Gascoigne sliding in at the back post and narrowly missing
We'll see it all.
A million times between here and kickoff in that game on Tuesday night as well. But look, it is what it is. I think it's one for the fans to salivate over. And of course, we'll be discussing all of these attributes and factors and what might happen in the game over the coming days, of course. But up next, it's a thrilling end to Group E, Spain suddenly coming to life. We'll also wave goodbye to Robert Lewandowski. Stay with us on the game.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, away from the drama of the group of death, there was another busy and eventful group in action. Group E, of course, where Spain earned their first win in style. They thrashed Slovakia 5-0 and they set up a last 16 tie with Croatia. But it was a result that not many people saw coming. Let's catch up with Paul Hurst of The Times, who is following Spain during this competition. And Paul, I think a lot of people were crying out for Luis Enrique's side to improve. Did you see this coming?
No, I didn't. I must admit, I went to the stadium thinking this will be a draw and maybe Spain will sneak into third position. But, you know, they were brilliant. They were very much helped by Martin Dubravka, who punched the ball into his own net to give Spain their first goal. But after that, they were just brilliant, Spain. They were really, really entertaining to watch. They were exactly the opposite of what they were in the first two matches. They just thought about their passing a little bit more. I think in the first two matches, it was almost like they were just passing for the sake of it. But with Busquets back in the team, I just think they looked a bit more composed and a bit more thoughtful, a bit more direct as well. I just think, and they were a lot more urgent. It was a very good win, and you know, it's 9 days overdue, I guess. But Spain have finally come to the Euros.
Is this a case of pressure makes diamonds? When it really counted, when all the criticism had come towards Spain, is that where maybe this side is going to be at their best?
I think so, yes. But there's also an element of Luis Enrique actually admitting that he was wrong. He's a very kind of stubborn coach, Luis Enrique, but for the first time he admitted that he's, you know, the selection for the first two games wasn't right. So he made four changes tonight. Brought in Cesar Azpilicueta as well, who was very good. Offered that extra little bit of kind of experience. Pablo Sarabia was very good on the wing as well, scored one and set one up. So, you know, it's good management from him as well, tinkering with the team, because, you know, that team for the first two matches wouldn't have gone far in this tournament. But I think after watching the game tonight, I think everyone in Spain is a little bit more hopeful.
Alvaro Morata, when he missed that penalty, what were you thinking?
Oh, I didn't know where to look. I just felt so sorry for him. It was so strange, you know, because when they won the penalty, he picked up the ball and everyone, you know, but I'd say about half of the stadium sort of held their breath and thought, oh no, really, are you going to take it? And then the other half were right, we're going to get behind this guy. They started chanting his name, Alvaro, Alvaro, etc. And then as soon as he put the ball down, I just thought, he's not going to score this. He just not got the confidence to do it. You could see it in his body language. He just wasn't comfortable at all. I mean, to be fair to Dubravka, it was a pretty good save. He dived, you know, quite a fair way to his right, but it was at quite a good height for him to save it. And it's kind of, it's lucky for Morata in the fact that it's, you know, we'll obviously not get much coverage in the morning because of the fact that Spain won 5-0. But yeah, another penalty missed for Spain, and that's five in a row that they've missed now. So that's not a good record you want in tournament football.
I was surprised to see a new defence with Eric Garcia. Firstly, the most annoying change of name on the back of a shirt I think I've ever seen. I mean, Eric. Just Eric. No frills, I guess. Fair enough, yeah. But he was alongside Cesar Azpilicueta, who, of course, has a much more stylish name on the back of his shirt. And Sarabia in the front three. Moreno still played out wide, but I think he was better this time around. A shift in terms of his wide position to the other side of the pitch as well. What do you make of the changes and whether they will continue? Because the game against Croatia will be a difficult one. They won't have, maybe not, the huge swathes of possession they've had in the first couple of games.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the change in defence was a good move because for the balance of the team, I think you need a left footer and a right footer. So you've got Laporte, the left-footed centre-half, and Eric Garcia's right footer. So I think that worked, and that will probably stay for the second match. I do think he's got to change it up front. I can't see how Morata continues to play up front. If it was up to me, I'd play Gerard Moreno as the head of the attack, as the number nine, and then I'd play Ferran Torres on the right and Sarabia on the left. It'd just be a lot more balanced that way. And Torres scored an amazing goal 44 seconds after coming on tonight, and you know, Morata just didn't look like scoring all night, so he offers more of a goal threat. So, you know, if I was in charge, that's the attack I'd like to pick.
Croatia next. Can this side beat them? Are you confident that this Spain will keep improving?
I'll probably revert to pessimism again and say that I think they'll struggle. Croatia is just such a good kind of tournament team. I know that's kind of a cliche, but you look at the way that they got to the semi-finals in Russia 3 years ago, and you know, you just admire how they, you know, grind results out, etc. And I just think that Spain are such an inexperienced team, even with Busquets back in the side. I just think they lack that overall kind of control in games, and they need Moreno to play up front, and I just don't see Luis Enrique doing that. So yeah, I think I'll just go for a narrow Croatia victory.
Paul Hurst, plenty more to come from you out in Spain as well, I'm sure. Following this team, there'll be eventful moments, but thank you for joining us on the Game Podcast. So, Group E ends with a flourish for Spain, but it did end with Sweden on top of the group. They go on to play Ukraine next. Of course, Spain in second. Slovakia and Poland went out. But we did get another great game in the Euros today, so I thought we had to discuss it to end the podcast. It finished Sweden 3, Poland 2, but a couple of goals from Poland's Robert Lewandowski. What a fantastic centre-forward. He showed us with a couple of glimpses today just what we'll be missing from here on out. Because, look, we spoke about those big names. Johnny, you mentioned a little bit earlier on some of the great names, forwards, the proven forwards who are firing this competition. You mentioned Lukaku, of course. You didn't mention Harry Kane. I wonder why that was. But Lewandowski did show today that if you just get him the ball, he can do something special. And I'm just personally sad to see Poland and him exit the competition at this stage. So just quickly, Jonathan Northcroft, the thing I was thinking most watching the game was, why wasn't Poland's whole game plan for all of their three matches just give Robert the ball?
Give it to Robert. I know. I mean, that first goal he scored, it wasn't even really a Lewandowski goal, you know. I mean, he kind of finds the spectacular a bit kind of unseemly, you know. He curled one in from the sort of corner of the box because he had to. You know, he's that type of player. He's so good, and he's so much the talisman of that team that he found it in himself. And a pretty mucked up Poland team, which hasn't really been the same since it changed managers and hasn't adapted the new style. And it's clearly got a lot of problems, and he just rose above that. He has risen above that in this tournament. Second goal was classic Lewandowski. in the box, just a cool bit of poaching. His 56th goal of the campaign, you know, for club and country. I think he scored 50-odd last year. This guy's in his 30s. He is the most phenomenal. I've interviewed him once, and he's the most phenomenal specimen to stand next to. He's just one of those kind of guys that makes you feel completely inferior if you're in the same space. Just an unbelievable shape, physique, nice fella as well. And a very intelligent footballer with a huge mentality. I'm pleased for him if that is his last Euros game to go out like that in that way. It's his fate, I suppose, to have played for a nation that wasn't quite good enough to carry his ambitions. But what a player, what a performance at these Euros in a losing cause.
Yeah, 32 years old now, James. He could be back. He could continue to do great things at this level, but the rest of the Poland squad will have to step their game up.
Yeah, I think you're right, Hugh. I have found over the past few years, I found Poland one of the most consistently disappointing nations at major tournaments, with the slight exception of Euro 2016. But I think it will be, if they can't have a decent run at the World Cup next year, I think it will be a real sadness if Robert Lewandowski, ends his career without having really made a big noise at a major tournament. Some of that, I suppose, is on him. You could argue he hasn't quite replicated his usual scoring record at major championships. But I think also, Poland have failed to provide him with a good, platform. Poland, as you say, all right, they're not one of the big football nations, but Poland have enough talented players to be better than what they are. To me, they always look poorly coached, frankly. You can't tell me that the talent level in this Poland team is inferior, for example, than, the talent level of, the Wales team that got to the semi-finals of Euro 2016, or the Sweden team that got to the quarters of the last World Cup. This is, it's a perfectly decent squad with one absolute superstar, all-time great, and, three or four very good players who play in Europe's top five leagues. Yeah, they're just consistently disappointing, unfortunately. And I wish they were, because I think they could be one of those really punchy middleweights who, made a big noise in tournaments. But unfortunately, they just never quite seem to get it right. But here's hoping that maybe they can next year at the World Cup.
Can we just give Sweden a bit of credit as well? I mean, two clinical finishes from Forsberg. Great, look, there was a cracking end to the game as well. Poland, obviously, thanks to Lewandowski, came back, and they had a couple of, he kind of drifted over to the left and just tried to collect the ball wherever he could and create something. He whipped a few balls in that were just everyone missed, and then Sweden broke away and scored. Sweden or Ukraine away, England now. I've said, there you go, Hugh, I've said it. We're the fools that start talking about who they're playing next.
I think Sweden are a really interesting proposition, because Sweden have got, they've got that ultra solid defensive base, haven't they? That we saw in the last World Cup. They're one of those super, super organized teams who will always be very, very solid. But they've now got that extra bit of individual quality that they didn't have at the last World Cup in Alexander Ishak. And also, he hasn't started every game, but Dejan Kulusevski as well. They've got two really, really good young attackers sort of grafted onto that base of very, very solid defence. And as Gregor said, they've got Ukraine in the first knockout round, which looks a very winnable match. Then they'll have the winner of Germany and England. They're certainly in the weaker half of the draw. Yeah, I mean, they look an interesting, they're not one of the favourites, but they could be potent, I think.
It's one of those. It feels like Euro 20 is much more open than we thought it might be. Now the group stage has come to an end. James Gerbrandt, Jonathan Northcroft, Gregor Robertson, thank you for being with me on this episode of The Game Podcast. Thank you all for listening as well. Remember, make sure you're subscribed to The Times and The Sunday Times. You can get it for less than £1 per day right now. Just go online, search thetimes.co.uk/thegame to begin your free trial. There is no pod on Thursday, but we will be back looking ahead to knockout action at Euro 2020 on Friday. We will see you then.
train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.